Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer here. We just finished recording an episode. We were in our post-podcast chat just shooting the crap, the two of us, when Odafe Oweh's fifth-year option was exercised by the Baltimore Ravens. We discussed it on the podcast. We gave differing takes as to whether the Ravens would end up picking it up. They had until Thursday's deadline, but before we get to the rest of the episode, we wanted to give our quick thoughts on the Ravens' decision here. Were you surprised at all simply because of how long it took them to make this decision?
I didn't read too much into the long deliberations because I think they waited until the last day or the last couple of days to pick up a fifth-year option on Lamar Jackson, who by that point had won the MVP. So this is just the normal pace of doing business. I will say a big couple of days for the Ravens and investing in alliterative names. We've got TJ Tampa. We've got Roger Rosengarten. And now we've got Odafe Oweh. So how about that? But you know, we talked about this on the pod a couple weeks ago, you know, whether this was a tough decision. And I think it probably was because, I mean, there can't be that many guys who've had their option pick up as a pass rusher with a whopping 13 career sacks to their ledger. It's usually a little bit more robust total there. But, you know, I think all of the underlying metrics suggest that he is a guy who is going to be better next year than he was this past year, just like he was better last year than he was the year prior. And I think that there are obviously some holes in his game. I think the Ravens have a lot of trust in Chuck Smith to get Odafe to a point where he can be the kind of, you know, just athletic freak with, you know, skill with pass rushing skill that I think they envisioned when they took him. But I think it's a win for Odafe. And it's also low-key kind of a nice PR win for Eric DaCosta, because obviously they did not pick up the option on Rashad Bateman, although that's a lot of, you know, kind of logistical stuff with Rashad Bateman not showing up. But, you know, before that, Patrick Queen, they didn't pick up the option on him. Marquise Brown, they picked the option up on him, or they were going to, but they ended up trading him. So you want to have this reputation as being a GM who picks guys in the first round who has their options picked up. You know, you don't want to be known as a guy who, you know, is kind of whiffing on these first round picks. So I think it's good business all around, considering just how much we saw guys who weren't every down edge rushers like Bryce Huff get. I think the $13.25 million is fair value for what Odafe Oweh could be in 2025.
I'm surprised they didn't mention the alliteration in their press release. You know, that feels like a big missed opportunity there. Yeah, you do want to have the good PR of picking up your fifth year option, because it is an indication that you have hit on that first round pick. And like we said, the production in terms of sacks haven't been there, but the periphery numbers have been excellent, and they've been getting better. Last year, you know, his get off time was outstanding. He was getting to the quarterback, just wasn't wrapping him up or bringing down the quarterback as frequently as he probably should have been. But from a value standpoint, what the Ravens really need is long-term pieces at edge rusher. And they just don't have too many of those. You know, they just drafted Adisa Isaac, but he's a mid-round pick. There's no guarantee he's going to be anything. They have Kyle Van Noy, who's 33. So his production could steeply fall off a cliff. And David Ojabo is just a walking question mark right now. So they need long-term answers at that position. It was why we thought there was a chance they would take an edge rusher in the first round this year. So they get Odafe Oweh for at least two more years. And in terms of production, there is a chance that he has a Justin Madubuike-esque breakout. I mean, Madubuike's first 3 years, obviously not a first-round pick, but were nothing to write home about. I mean, he had 5.5 sacks in his third season. That was a jump over 3 sacks in his first 2 seasons. And then in 2023, breaks out for 13 sacks. So there is a chance, I think, Odafe Oweh, given his physical tools, has that kind of breakout season. And then you're saying, well, the fifth-year option, that's a bargain. Now we're talking. So it's going to be on him now. It's going to be incumbent upon him to step up his production without having Jadeveon Clowney there. Without having another veteran presence along that pass rush. So those are our thoughts on the Odafe Oweh fifth-year option. Jonah Schaefer has complete coverage on the BaltimoreBanner.com, where you can subscribe $1 for 6 months. So head there to read more. But in the meantime, enjoy the rest of the episode. It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm running a little low on sleep, not just because of the long weekend, but because I found a small critter in my apartment last night. We'll get to that in just a bit. Jonas, we are going to talk today about the Ravens 2024 draft class, a nine-man draft class. We have six questions remaining for this group of drafted players. But first, got to get to a good review that was written on Apple Podcasts by Mr. Duncan 67. Says, here is my great review for you guys to read on the pod. So you're welcome. Podcasting enjoyment rating, A+. Mock draft quality rating, F-. And Mel Kiper would agree. So thank you, Mr. Duncan. Couldn't agree more. We had the Ravens coming out of the first round with Cooper DeJean. I thought we did pretty well. But Jonas, some of our later mid-round picks were... We did some poor maneuvering around the draft board, trading up for guys who were already off the board and not getting great value, I'll go ahead and say.
Tough but fair. Do you think that the individual who was trolling us with the F- could possibly be the little Mr. Duncan, little friend 67. You got there in your room?
It could be. Yeah, I mean, I tend to think that the friend in my room, which is small and I think furry, cannot speak, but I did hear some scratching noises last night, so you never know. Quick question though, Jonas.
Tell the good people, by the way, you slept last night.
Well, I slept the first half in my bed and then the second half in my car. Look, I know mice can't hurt you, but I think it was a mouse. I'm not 100% sure. I just, based off the size, I used my phone flashlight. By the way, quick reminder, if you write us a good review, I will read it out here on the podcast. Thank you, Mr. Duncan. I woke up my roommate because it was 3:30 in the morning and I heard scratching noises and I saw some small critter in my room. Was I wrong to wake up my roommate? There's a mouse in the apartment. We could have had an infestation. There could have been one in his room.
There are certain things you do as a man, Paul, that you just leave for yourself. And I mean, you know, you have a tough time sleeping sometimes, and I don't know what your good bud Brendan does sleep wise, but If I got woken up for the small trivial concerns of a mouse, that I don't know, man. And I've had some bad experiences with mice. Have I told you about the time, Paul, that I thought I saw a mouse? I think this was in college. I thought I saw a mouse in our kitchen, and then it just quickly kind of zoomed away from wherever I was. And I was making making myself a sandwich. So I popped the bread in the toaster. And I'm like, where the hell did that little mouse go? And then, you know, 1 minute goes by, 2 minutes go by. And then before you get the, you know, obligatory pop out of the toaster, I hear some more skittering. And the mouse had hidden in the toaster.
Oh, no.
Where I was cooking bread. It got out before it became a toast mouse. But that was one of the most upsetting things I'd ever seen.
That's horrific. I would never eat toast again. Oh, I mean, thank God that didn't end in gore. That is just despicable. That is why they're in places you feel violated. You feel like your skin is crawling. I hate that. I hate that for you. And, yet, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Do you know what I didn't do, Paul? I didn't tell my freaking roommate.
You know what? Then the next time your roommate was making toast, he maybe have had a nasty surprise waiting for him. And here's the thing. My roommate does use the toaster 10 times as much as I do. So maybe he'll come across that mouse at some point. All right, Jonas, let's get to our draft talk. Less mouse talk. We have six questions for the 2024 Ravens draft, a draft that included nine players. And I'll start with your question, Jonas, about which of the nine players that you see on your screen. Look at this. Look at this great, great graphic I've made for those of you who are watching on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. If you could be listening to it after the fact on any of your favorite podcast platforms, but I'd suggest you go back and watch it. Jonas, what's your first question for these nine gentlemen here?
It's definitely a limited pool, but which rookie of these nine will play the most snaps this year? To me, it comes down to two obvious selections, but maybe you've got a wild card there, Paul.
I think to me, it's Nate Wiggins. It's the easy answer. It's the chalk answer. He's your first round pick, but we went through Marlon Humphrey's rookie year. when he was the 16th overall pick and he played 55% of the snaps in his rookie year. Nate Wiggins was taken later in the first round, but there's a clear and open spot for Nate Wiggins right now on that, on this roster. And that's as the third cornerback on this team. You could move Marlon Humphrey inside. You have Zach Orr pulling the strings here, who is a first year defensive coordinator. We don't know what his propensities are yet for playing rookies, but Nate Wiggins, to me, the talent is there. He was playing at an extremely high level at Clemson. The speed, he has the ability to latch on to a number one wide receiver. The strength is going to be the important thing. Can he be strong enough? Can he be physical enough to deal with, to stop the run in the tough AFC North? And can he be physical enough to deal with some of the bigger wide receivers in the AFC North? He's got a whole summer to bulk up and to figure that out. And I think that he will. So Nate Wiggins is my answer. Who do you have, Jonas?
I'm inclined to say Wiggins as well, but I think what one reason that you didn't mention, Paul, is just the fact that for whatever reason, the Ravens cornerback room just has a tough time staying healthy. And yeah, obviously Wiggins being a smaller guy, or at least a lighter guy, could lend itself to him, you know, taking a knock here or there and maybe finding himself on injured reserve, knock on wood. It's easy to see Roger Rosengarten, their second round tackle, being a guy who starts 12, 13 games this year. And if he is starting 12, 13 games, then he might hit, you know, 900, 1,000 snaps. Because if you are a starting tackle, if you're a starting lineman on this team, you're playing 100% of the offensive snaps. But I just am still kind of calibrating my expectations for him relative to Daniel Faalele, relative to whoever they might bring in, you know, along this offensive line. You know, a friend of the show, Brandon Thorne, had a podcast out last night just doing a team-by-team breakdown of the guys that he evaluated and kind of where he sees them fitting in. And, you know, we didn't get to Rosengarten on his list of prospects that he evaluated, because he was not, in Brandon's estimation, even a third-round pick. He was like low third round, high fourth round. And, you know, he pointed out that Michigan game where he really, really struggled. And, you know, I went back and watched the cut-ups on YouTube from that game as well. And it is not blue chip talent that he is struggling against. It is, you know, Jalen Harrell and Braden McGregor, these guys who we had maybe talked about, you know, in the course of a mock draft as being like late day three guys. There was, you know,
he one did go up against Chris Jenkins.
Yeah, there was, but obviously Chris Jenkins is a different kind of body type than he would be facing out there on the edge. Sure. So I just worry with his relatively limited strength. You know, he could just totally transform his body. He might have already totally transformed his body from what it was in late January, early February, to what it might be in September. But there could be some real growing pains, like there are for a lot of rookies. You know, I went back and looked at the next gen stats data from the past 2 years, and I think there have been like just 12 rookies total who've played at tackle like over 400 or 500 pass blocking snaps. So you're basically getting starter level playing time. Just I think three of those guys, Paul, had like a pressure allowed rate above the league average. So not only is it tough to get onto the field, but actually when you do get onto the field, it is exceedingly difficult to be even average as a rookie. And I think that's probably what's getting lost in, you know, people glomming onto the PFF stat about him having allowed zero sacks and him being this, you know, very smart, physically gifted guy. It's just the fact that it is a whole new ballgame once you get to that NFL level.
I do think there is a chance that Devontae Walker gets a good amount of snaps as well on offense. If Eric DaCosta doesn't add to the wide receiver room over the coming months via trade or picking up somebody off the street, I think that there's a chance that Walker really shines in camp. He has incredible athletic gifts. And we saw last year, you know, Zay Flowers, there were some questions when he was coming into the league about his size and him being taken in the first round by the Ravens. And he showed in camp right away. He had an instant connection with Lamar Jackson. And by the end of the season, he was leading the way. So I think there is a chance that Devontae Walker, I know he's competing for playing time with Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers, but look, Bateman has struggled with injuries the last couple seasons. Nelson Agholor is, I think, you know, a solid number four wide receiver, but I think there is a chance that Devontae Walker could end the season with maybe more snaps. Second question for me, Jonas, for you, Jonas, I should say, because this is my question now. Should the Ravens have been more aggressive in their attempts to get a tackle in this draft? We saw Duke's offensive lineman can really do it all, can be a guard, could be a tackle. Graham Barton, I'll throw him into this category here. He went four picks before the Ravens pick at number 30. He went 26th to the Tampa Bay Bucks. Oklahoma tackle Tyler Guyton went one pick before the Ravens. That was to the Cowboys, who traded back and still ended up with Tyler Guyton. Houston tackle Patrick Paul went seven picks before the Ravens' second round pick to the Miami Dolphins. And Notre Dame tackle Blake Fisher went three picks before the Ravens' second round pick to the Houston Texans. Should the Ravens have been more aggressive? You talk about the struggles that we saw Roger Rosengarten have against elite talent in that Michigan game. There were legitimate knocks on Roger Rosengarten as a prospect. Should the Ravens have tried to get one of these more sure thing prospects like Graham Barton, Tyler Guyton, or in the second round, Patrick Paul or Blake Fisher?
I would probably strike Graham Barton from this list, if only because it seems like as soon as he got drafted, everyone was penciling him as a guard or as a center. You know, obviously he was very, very proficient at tackle for Duke, but I think the best position that he was going to play at that next level was going to be guard, was going to be center. Roger Rosengarten might play guard for the Ravens, but I think the expectation is that, you know, tackle is going to be that next spot for him. So if you are moving up and, you know, let's say sending a fourth round pick to move up four picks, then you are giving up a potential TJ Tampa for a guy who might not even play that uber premium position of offensive tackle. So it's a little bit of a tough, you know, calculus here for me, because the other guys that you mentioned as well, you know, Tyler Guyton, obviously it probably, you know, wouldn't have taken a whole lot to move up and get him if Dallas was even interested in doing that, because they have their own offensive tackle deficiencies there. But, you know, is Tyler Guyton more pro ready than Roger Rosengarten? If, you know, part of the reason that they took Rosengarten in the first place was because they feel like he is closer to getting on the field than a Tyler Guyton, then you're giving away draft capital to get a guy who is less likely to, you know, be a week one starter than Rosengarten. Same thing with Patrick Paul, you know, not athletically super gifted. Blake Fisher is athletically super gifted, but the inconsistencies there with his technique are the reason why, despite being good enough to start as a freshman in Notre Dame, he lasted as long as he did in the draft. So I think the Ravens kind of found their sweet spot of like athletic enough and competent enough to be an early season contributor, and they didn't have to give up any of that precious draft capital. I mean, you said it how many times during the weekend, Paul, you know, Eric DaCosta saying that's not really something that we do.
It's not, but at the end of the day, you know, if a sixth round pick, or let's say a fourth round pick is, or even a third round pick is the difference between you getting a top tier offensive lineman and tackle, it doesn't matter all that much. You're not going to go back and look at it's similar to a quarterback, not quite the same, but if you get a good guy at that position, if you get a stalwart at offensive tackle for years to come, you're not going to care too much about what you gave up to get him. I mean, right. So he's still going to be on a rookie contract, so he's still not going to be eating a ridiculous amount of your salary. Go get one of these guys that you know is going to be sure thing, because sure, Roger Rosengarten, you can say good value. You didn't have to trade a third, fourth round pick to trade up to get him. But if he's not as good as one of these other guys, that's going to be a problem during the regular season. And the comfort of having an extra third round pick next year is not going to give you a whole lot of not going to put your mind at ease when he's struggling against NFL level defensive linemen. So to me, I think they probably could have been a little bit more aggressive in going to get that guy. But if Roger Rosengarten is the tackle, then ultimately, you know, we'll say good piece of business by Eric DaCosta not having to trade up to get this guy. I just thought that they should have come away with more of a sure thing at offensive tackle. And especially because they only ended the weekend with two offensive linemen that were drafted out of their 9-man class. I still think there's work to be done on the offensive line. Jonas, what's your next question for me?
Before we get that, I mean, to your point of just the whole conversation about whether they should have done this, whether they should have done that. We're going to be talking probably every month during the season about comparing these guys to players that were taken right around them, you know, in that area, because they took Rosengarten ahead of Suamatia. They you know, took Wiggins right after that run on cornerbacks, or even, you know, before Cooley McKinstry was taken.
Cooper Jean was taken.
So there are a lot of guys, as Eric DaCosta mentioned, who were part of runs or the start of runs or end of runs, and they play very, very important spots, and they probably are going to have very, very important roles in all of this.
Yeah, there.
But Paul, my next question for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, this draft I think is interesting because there were runs and there were clumps of guys. Like, there were clumps of offensive tackles that we were considering. There were clumps of cornerbacks that we were considering. And so you get one of those guys and fine, but you better have gotten the right guy. Similar to Devontae Walker, you know, he was in the midst of this kind of wide receiver run in the middle rounds. Is he going to look better or worse than Troy Franklin from Oregon when all is said and done? So we'll see.
Paul, favorite draft pick highlight reel to watch? That's our primary mode of that's your primary mode of evaluating talent is just queuing up the Just Bombs productions and 3 minutes of lo-fi beats while guys just play football.
I can do that whole first 15-second rap by heart because that is still the same song. I don't know why that guy has used the same song all these years. He's been doing this for like 10 years and he still uses the same 15-second clip of that song. And the title introduction that looks like it came from iMovie 2008. But look, he's great at cutting up the highlights, so I'll keep consuming his content. It's Rasheen Ali for me. You know it's the Marshall running back who plays like Gus Bus when it comes down to his goal line carries. He had 23 rushing touchdowns in 2021. Played in only three games in 2022, but last year in 2023, he had 15 in 12 games. He gets the ball with goal to go, and he's bowling guys over. For a guy who is diminutive in stature and who can also do stuff out of the passing game, he is surprisingly tough. So I really like Rasheen Ali, and I also think he's got some juice with, like, in between the tackles as a one-cut runner as well. So Rasheen Ali, to me, is my guy. Who's your favorite? It's not exactly easy to watch offensive tackle highlights, so I'm guessing it's not Roger Rosengarten.
There was a play from might have been the Michigan game where he does look like a superhero, where he just clubs a guy with this kind of arm over technique, and then sprints out on a screenplay and nails the nickelback or the cornerback just in time to free up this 10 to 15 yard run. And it's like, man, if you're an offensive lineman, if you're a 300-pound guy who's, you know, all his life was told that, you know, you're just going to be this dumpy little guy and you can't actually be the main hero, that must just feel so freaking cool. And it looked cool too. I mean, it was just like boom, boom. But for me, it's Devontae Walker, and it's specifically Devontae Walker at Kent State. You know, that was obviously where he came to the spotlight. That was, I think, what got him on the radar of teams like UNC. And, you know, I think probably the most eye-catching stat from maybe any Raven draft pick, aside from like the 4.28 40 for Nate Wiggins, was the average touchdown catch for Devontae Walker over his entire career was 30.6 yards, 30.7 yards, one of those two. And you watch the Devontae Walker tape at Kent State, you know, he had a couple of nice touchdowns at UNC for sure, but you know, he's wearing the 81. He just looks like Randy Moss. It's just a dude on a different level of athletic plane than the rest of those guys, you know. And it's not just him beating up on, you know, the group of five competition that Kent State was facing. Like, there's I think it was a screen pass or just a pass in the flat where it's Kent State versus Georgia, and he's running away from Georgia defensive backs. It's like, holy moly, that is impressive. So in a draft that's kind of light on, you know, skill position talent, especially at the top, I think Devontae Walker, specifically the Kent State highlights, which you can find on YouTube, really wet your whistle.
Yeah, my follow-up question for you, Jonas, is when you watch the UNC tape of Devontae Walker, did you come away more impressed with Drake May or with DeVonta's Walker?
I mean, isn't the answer kind of neither? I guess because there are plays where, yeah, I mean, the reason why, you know, like I think that there's reporting that the Commanders didn't have Drake May as one of their like secondary options. Like as soon as Caleb Williams went off the board, it was down to Jaden Williams and not Drake
May. Daniels.
It was Jaden Williams, excuse me, Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy. So I think there were a lot of teams that for whatever reason, you know, obviously a lot of very smart people had Drake May, not just as their, you know, number two quarterback prospect, but number one quarterback prospect, you know, Nate Tice at Yahoo has been on the Drake May, you know, train ever since that the season ended. But there are a lot of plays there where the mechanics aren't there or the inaccuracy is missing. And he's just spraying the ball all over the field. And DeVonta's Walker definitely got the short stick of that a couple of times. I mean, but we should also say that DeVonta's Walker did not have that great of a season in terms of, you know, putting stuff on tape that would have him fall to the fourth round. You know, there are those concerns about him being more than just a guy who can run these linear routes. You want to see him sink those hips. You want to see him be able to turn, you know, in a more agile way. So I think it's possible that both of those guys probably dragged each other down a little bit in some ways.
The worst part about the DeVonta's Walker tape is the first play of one of the videos. It's an NC State highlight where he catches it, the ball over the middle and dashes towards the end zone and fumbles right at the goal line, which is just triggering for all Ravens fans. I don't know if they don't show the replay if he actually crossed the plane or not, but tough watch. So not exact. Would not recommend that highlight reel in particular. All right, Jonas, my next question for you is draft pick comparisons. You've come up with a list of several of these draft pick comps. What do you have for the Ravens 2024 class?
Paul, I'm just going to shoot these out rapid fire at you. And you cheer me or you boo me as you see fit. Okay. That is your prerogative. That is your charge. These might not make a lot of sense, but they also might make all the sense in the world. Nate Wiggins, rookie year, Russell Westbrook. Just a ball of energy, pure athlete. You look back at Russell Westbrook as a rookie in OKC, he cannot shoot. He still can't really, figured out how to shoot besides maybe that MVP season, but he was shooting like under 40% on twos. And he was just still trying to figure out, you know, what life was like in the NBA. I think he averaged more points per game as a rookie with OKC than he did as a freshman at UCLA. And it was just the start of a wonderful, wonderful NBA career, but there were certain things that he just could not do. And for Nate Wiggins, there may be certain things that he also will not be able to do, namely, you know, tackle in space. We know he's got that dog in him. We know he's able to track down guys and, you know, make these spectacular highlight reel plays by just tracking down guys with that 4.2 speed. But if he can only settle in at, you know, 180 pounds, 185 pounds, there are not a lot of guys that play at that weight for a reason. So it's going to be interesting to see if there is a hole in his game and how much he'll be able to overcome it with the rest of his athleticism and IQ and ball skills, and how much that will be, you know, an active drag on his playing time, because the Ravens have some other guys in that cornerback room who are maybe don't have his elite skills, but also don't have as potentially significant a deficiency as him being the kind of lightweight that he is.
My amendment to this would be maybe Kevin Durant or Brandon Ingram in their rookie years, because he is slight of frame. And those two guys coming into the league, it was like Chet Holmgren is another guy who's just skin and bone. Maybe needs to bulk up.
Let's not say Chet Holmgren, because Chet Holmgren did not play at all as a rookie. Ingram would have been good. Roger Rosengarten for me is a portable outdoor refrigerator. I did not know that these things existed until I went looking for alts to a mini fridge, because I don't think a guy who's 6'5", 310 could be dubbed mini anything. But these things are cool. They have like LED lights. You can put soda and beer in them. But also, they are not the classic, you know, huge fridge that you would have out there. They're a little bit more mobile, obviously. They're portable.
Are they battery operated?
I forget exactly what probably. I don't know. I'm not in the market for a portable outdoor fridge, but okay. they had LED lights.
DaCosta was apparently,
you know, fun. it's just a matter of, you know, can you deal with maybe some less cargo space, which is definitely, as with Nate Wiggins, probably the issue is he going to be able to anchor? Is he going to be able to handle these big hulking dudes? Because he is only a portable outdoor refrigerator, which is fun in some circumstances, but maybe not the most use in all of them over the course of a winter, fall to winter season.
Give me your rapid fire for the next round of guys.
Adisa Isaac is obviously a Ford F-350 Super Duty, which is apparently the best car engine on the market. Okay. Adisa Isaac, tremendous engine, never stops. Ford F-350, apparently you can get well over 200,000 miles without any fear of breaking down. Devontae Walker, obviously he's an ostrich because ostriches can run really, really fast. But when was the last time you ever saw an ostrich sink their hips and make that 90-degree cut like they're running a dig route? It's always just like them chasing after cars or chasing after people in the safari. So yeah, that's obviously the comparison. TJ Tampa is a remote sales rep because we don't know if he can actually, you know, go from city to city, from man to man, and go with people and be out there among the people. Maybe he's just best served as like a cover two corner. Maybe the Ravens like him as a safety eventually. You know, that 40 time is a little bit of a worry. We know he can play zone. We know he can get up in guys' faces at the line of scrimmage, but can he actually run with people? Can he travel with guys? And remote sales reps, they can work from home, and that's fine with it. Rasheen Ali, this is obviously, he is a the federal sector, just as a big amorphous idea, because he brings a lot of benefits, just like a federal sector job. But do you know what the federal sector has right now, Paul? Do you know what it's dealing with? It's dealing with a lot of turnover. And you know what Rasheen Ali has dealt with the past couple of years? A lot of turnovers. You can't be fumbling the ball five times and expect to have a significant role on the Ravens or any team. So it's good benefits. You're lucky to have him, but you're also dealing with some significant turnover problems. Devin Leary, inspired also by your comp. Yes. And for that reason, I'm going with discount Jameis Winston. This is like superstore Jameis Winston, because obviously Jameis Winston was number one overall pick, eight, 9 years ago, whenever that was. Yeah. And he has turned into a guy who is capable of like 30 touchdown seasons, but also 20 interception seasons. And Devin Leary, the Ravens would not, they're not taking him because of his accuracy. They are taking him because he can throw the ball really, really strong, and at one point was considered a, you know, top end prospect. So we talked about just how troublesome those inaccuracy issues are, how woeful the turnover worthy plays are. He led the SEC with, I think, 7 more turnover worthy plays than any quarterback in the league last year, which is a huge, huge red flag. But what are you going to do? Rounding out here with Nick Samick, don't really have a comparison for him as an offensive lineman, because there's not a whole lot of great tape out there. But I did look at his TikTok the other day, and he has a good voice, and he's covering Noah Kahan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think it's just Khan.
So I'm going to just go with a.
I think it's just possible. Khan, like possible. The Star Trek character.
Okay, then the Google pronunciation that I just looked up.
I mean, maybe I don't know.
Yeah. So obviously, if he's singing Noah Kahan, then why not? Why pick any other musical artist? Because that's clearly who he's emulating. And then for Sanusi Kane, I don't know. Is he just like a non-controllable player in a video game? Because we just don't know
NPC
what he might be.
Sure. I like that. I like the Idrissa Isaac.
It's a little too premature, I think, to say like poor man's Geno Stone, because I think that's going to probably be the label attached to any like late round safety that comes into Baltimore for this offseason, next couple off seasons. Like, oh, why can't he just turn into a guy who finished second in the NFL interceptions? Like, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, he wasn't invited to the combine. I think that's primarily where it starts. If he ends up being a Geno Stone, that would be, I mean, that's like the 99th percentile outcome. That would be terrific.
He's not Geno Stone. He's Geno Rock.
There we go. I like the Adisa Isaac Ford F-350 Super Duty truck I'm sure it's gotten the JD Power and Associates Award. Isn't that something you hear in like every commercial? And does the average person know what that means? I certainly don't know what that means. Does anybody sitting on the couch going, oh, it won the JD Power and Associate? Oh, well, I hadn't considered it before, but maybe now that I've heard of this, that now that it's won this great award, I'll consider buying it. Do you know what that means?
I don't, but of course Vox has an explainer, and the headline is, who is JD Power and what do his associates do?
An investigation. All right, what's your next question for me, Jonas? We got two more of these, and that last question took up about 28 minutes of our podcast here.
What is the next big or middling move for the Ravens? Not a lot of cap space, no draft picks left as far as I can tell. So who is the next big to medium range acquisition that could be on Eric DaCosta's territory or on Eric DeCourt? DaCosta's radar. And we should remind people, with the passage yesterday of the 4 p.m. deadline, any outside free agent that the Ravens bring in will no longer affect their compensatory picks for next year. So it's kind of clear sailing for the Ravens and a lot of other teams, just for the few free agents who are available.
I would say it's got to be along the offensive line. They came out of this draft with two picks along the O-line, and I think there is still some guard depth still out there that they could attach themselves to. Mekhi Becton just got signed by the Eagles. Somebody of that ilk. There's got to be a veteran that they can bring in to raise the level of competition. Maybe not a tackle. If they feel good about Roger Rosengarten and they have Daniel Falele battling it out on the right side, okay, you could convince me of that. But at guard, they lost their two starters, and just betting on internal improvements, I'm just not 100% sure about that. So I would think that they need to go out and trade for or sign another guard or tackle.
Yeah, I think probably the guy that has been the most connected to the Ravens because of the questions at left guard is Dalton Risner, who was a longtime starter, I think in Denver, and then moved to, I believe, the Vikings. I'm looking up right now. Yep, went from Denver to the Vikings. Didn't start all the Vikings games last year, but he kind of took the starting position in like week 4, week 5, and didn't let go. And for whatever reason, didn't have enough of a market in those first couple of waves of free agency to sign. So he's still out there. He was like toward the bottom of those top 100 best free agents in the 2024 class. Over the cap had him at like $10 million a year. PFF had him at $5.5 million a year. So I think probably, this late in the game, it's definitely closer to that low watermark of $5.5 million, which is not nothing, especially if you're, giving out maybe a 2-year deal to a guy like that. We know that the Ravens have a lot of ways that they can create some cap space. And I imagine that is probably something that they would look into doing for a smaller scale signing, maybe someone like why am I blanking on the name? I forget. It'll come back to me, but yeah.
I think that's where they would target things. But I also think that there are other areas that they could address. I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they try to bring in another wide receiver. I think that maybe they could add to that room, probably not like a lower end guy, but they could go out and get like somebody like Laquon Treadwell. They're going to need warm bodies, but they could also use some top end talent at wide receiver as well. I mean,
team building. Zay Jones just released by the Jaguars, 34 catches, 320 yards last year. That's about the level of prospect of player, of veteran that I think you'll find at this. Yeah. Oh, by the way, the guy that I neglected to mention, or that I forgot to mention, was Darrell Worley. You know, we don't know how any of these rookies are going to look at safety. Obviously, Darrell Worley dealt with the injuries last year, which was a shame because I thought he actually looked pretty good when he was on the field. But he's a guy who the Ravens who could bring in certainly on the cheap.
My final question for you, Jonas, who's your favorite undrafted free agent that the Ravens have signed here? Because we've got a list of about 20 guys. I just love the schools that you see pop up on this list. Lock Haven University in Pennsylvania, North Central, Findlay University. I can't say I've been watching a whole lot of Lock Haven tape this season, but is there one guy that sticks out to you among this group, Jonas?
Speaking of just totally small schools and the highlight reels that come out of them, Paul, did you ever get a chance to look at the highlight reel for Deonte Hardy at Assumption College?
Yes. Wasn't he the guy that finished with or D'Angelo Hardy?
No. The Ravens, North Central? The Ravens' new returner.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, I didn't watch his college tape. You went back and watched his college tape from like 8 years ago?
I'm not like grinding it. It's out there on YouTube. I was like, what is a guy who was 5'6 and the fastest player on the field playing at Assumption College? What could that possibly look like? And it is exactly as fun as it sounds like. He is just...
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's like Tavon Austin back playing at Dunbar. I don't know if you saw that highlighted really either, but it's the quickest, fastest guy in the field, just able to run through anyone and everyone. Anyway, highest recommendation, try to find the Deonte Hardy Assumption College tape. It is Assumption University tape. It's fun. As for undrafted rookies, I think it's going to be the homer answer, but it's the obvious answer, which is Bo Braid, Maryland safety. You know, was the second best player available there on Mel Kiper's chart on draft day for a long, long time. We thought he might go in the fourth round, thought he might go in the fifth round. He fell out of the draft completely, which was a definitely shame for him because it definitely cost him probably a few hundred thousand dollars. But, listen, he was a 2-year starter for a good Maryland secondary. Doesn't have blazing speed. I think it was like a 4.6 or 4.62, which isn't that bad when you consider Geno Stone, I think, was only like a 4.58 coming out of Iowa. He was a team leader, team captain at Maryland. So he brings those intangibles, obviously, just down the road in Howard County. He's a Terp, so he's going to have that natural cheering section root him on. I just think that considering, how kind of ho-hum we were on the Ravens drafting Sanusi Kane with that seventh round pick, to pair a guy like that with Bo Braid, who, the consensus big boards had at being a day three guy, I think it's just a really smart piece of business for the Ravens.
My guy here on this list is quarterback Emory Jones, who played 6 years in college, Jonas. And four of those were at Florida, one at Arizona State, one at Cincinnati. Look, the stats are not great. The tape is not phenomenal. Completed just 61% of his passes last year, 18 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. But he did have 560 rushing yards. And 2 years ago with Florida, he had 758 rushing yards back in 2021. I don't think he's a great player. I don't think he's a great prospect. But the Ravens need to add to that quarterback room. And we have made our thoughts on Devin Leary clear. We're both not wild about him as a sixth round pick. And I'll say the gap between any sixth round pick and any undrafted free agent is not all that wide. So I think there's a chance that Emory Jones could come into camp and look better than Devin Leary in camp. That doesn't mean that he'll make the team. That doesn't mean he'll be QB3 over Malik Cunningham or, certainly not Josh Johnson. But the Ravens need to keep taking swings at this position. If they're not going to invest heavily in a QB2 behind Lamar Jackson, somebody like Emory Jones, who stylistically plays a little bit more like Lamar than Devin Leary, who was no part of Kentucky's rushing attack last year, played no part in that, then maybe he has a slight advantage there. The age, the lack of production, all of it massively concerning, but it's an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, when I saw his name show up on the timeline of guys that the Ravens had signed, I was like, is that the Emory Jones? And my initial reaction was like, I never saw the movie, but the clip that goes on Twitter every once in a while where it's Big Boy in ATL. It's like, now I know that ain't who I think it is, because like Emory Jones, the Emory Jones who started at Florida like 4 or 5 years ago, the guy that everyone thought might be you know, this ascendant talent who never really figured it out with that dual threat stuff. So, you know, it's probably, we're probably not looking at a Jaden Daniels situation where a guy just suddenly figures it all out with his athletic tools. But, you know, Tyler Huntley went undrafted for a reason, and the Ravens found a way to make good use out of him. And at least you are getting yourself a potential, you know, scout team quarterback. If the Ravens, you know, let's say keep three quarterbacks on their 53 man roster, or maybe he turns into something else, you know, who knows.
Jonas, we will continue to have podcasts throughout the off season. This is just the start. We have so much planned for the spring and for the summer. We've got plenty of fun content coming your way. For Jonas Schaefer, I'm Paul Mancano. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.